You read the first canto of book 3, The Pursuit of the Unknowable. Yeah. How many people were here last week? Okay. How far did you read?
Line 7.
Oh, you went even further?
Oh, we went even further. But we were actually quite baffled then.
You were baffled. Yeah. Well, it's the pursuit of the unknowable. So it is bound to be somewhat baffling.
How appropriate it is.
So I think I've told you many times before that it's helpful always to take the canto in its context. Where is it appearing in the poem? So here we are at the first canto of book 3. Aswapati has completed his great journey as the traveler of the worlds. He'd reached the top of all that can be known. So now he's in pursuit of the unknowable, having gained all cosmic knowledge. And I think these first lines are a very poignant expression of that feeling which drives one to turn in search of the ineffable. All is too little that the world can give. All the power and knowledge that we can find here in the world, in the manifestation, are the gifts of time. They are the products of time and space. And they are not able to fill the sacred thirst of the spirit. Everything here is a form of the one, of that greatness, no? And by the breath of grace of that one, we can live, and all these things can be here. In a way that one is nearer to us than nearness self, he says, than even the quality, the feeling of nearness. But it is some utter truth of what we are, some ultimate, essential truth of what we are. Aswapati is feeling that that essential truth, that one, is hidden by its own works, by all its own creations. So it seems far off. It feels impenetrable. He can't enter into it. It's hidden. It doesn't speak to him. And so it seems something obscure, veiled in darkness and mystery. Aswapati is also missing a presence, the presence by which all things have charm. This is the presence of the Divine Mother. He's lost, he's had a glimpse of her, but now he doesn't feel that presence anymore. And because he's had a glimpse, an experience of her, he is missing that glory. So here is the universe, it's living on, but he doesn't feel her presence inhabiting it. It's so that cause which has given rise to this whole world seems empty. Yes, she?
Okay.
and that labor to know. That's what he has been doing. He's been in search of knowledge. He's been in search of the power that can change, can transform human life. But now that labor to know seems something futile, in vain. It's just the pride of the will that makes one want to know. And the all knowledge now ends in the unknowable. He's a ruler, but the effort to rule also seems to be useless, a trivial achievement, scorned by time. He may rule for a while, he may do great deeds, but how long will that last? Because all power seems to be drawn back into the all-powerful, the omnipotent. This is the state that he's in. After all these great achievements, Sri Aurobindo says, a cave of darkness guards the eternal light. This is an experience which has been reported by many mystics, that in order to come into direct contact with God, with the Supreme, one passes through a stage of unknowing. It's been called the cloud of unknowing. Yeah. So he seems to be in that cave of darkness, which is protecting, keeping the eternal light from being revealed. His striving heart, it has been his heart with its intense aspiration, which has been leading him on all this great journey. But now a silence settled on his striving heart. He's absolved, he's washed free of all the desires and impulses and impetuses of the world. He turned to the ineffable's timeless call. The ineffable, what cannot be put into words, which cannot be expressed. No words, no expressions can reveal that ineffable. And yet it is calling him somehow. So then there are lines which describe his experience. He feels the presence of a being which is unnameable and yet in a way intimate, very familiar. He feels also a wide, compelling ecstasy and peace. He feels that in himself. He feels it in everything, and yet it's somehow unseizable. So that feeling of a being and the wideness and ecstasy and peace, sometimes it comes near to him and sometimes it fades away. His soul tries to follow it, but it's fading away, as if it's always luring him further, attracting him to go further and further on his journey. And he has the feeling that that is the only thing that can be satisfying, the delight
of that being and that wideness. If that is not there, even the greatest actions seem dull. If it is there, even the smallest things have the feeling of being something divine. So when that's there, the emptiness, the deep emptiness of the heart is filled. But when that uplifting divine presence draws away, then there's the feeling that existence has no meaning, no aim. Everything seems to be inane, lost in the inane. What is meaningless, senseless, without significance or purpose or value. So then all these things which he's experienced, this order, this hierarchy of the planes of existence and the God-like fullness of the instruments of all the capacities and parts of the being, suddenly they look like just props. Props are what actors use when they're acting a scene on the stage. They will have some things that they move around and use to help them play their scene. So all these planes and all the capacities of the being, these seem just like trivial props for an impermanent scene, something that's just being played out and it won't last long. But he feels that he does not know who that mightiness is, that being, that vastness. No. It's impalpable. In a way, it can't be touched, it can't be felt, and yet it fills everything that is. It has made a million worlds, and now it's blotting them out, hiding them, or even making them extinct. It puts on 1,000 shapes and names, and then it discards them. Sometimes it appears like a vastness which can't be discerned, which can't be seen. Sometimes it feels like a subtle kernel in the soul. The kernel is the very essence of the fruit. Something deep, central within. So then the next two lines reflect that, no? A distant greatness left it huge and dim, that indiscernible vast, or a mystic closeness shut it sweetly in, this sweet kernel in the soul. Sometimes it seems like a figment, an imagination, a construction of the mind, or a robe, a covering. And sometimes it even feels as if it's just his own huge shadow, his own colossal shade. So now he doesn't know where to go, where he is going. A giant doubt overshadowed his advance. It's very difficult to go anywhere if we don't know where to go. But he gets moved. He gets attracted. He gets attracted, allured across a neutral, featureless, all-supporting emptiness. The emptiness of that vastness is nursing, feeding his lone immortal spirit. He's attracted towards some supreme, which is recondite, hidden. He's helped, and he's even forced, he's coerced by enigmatic powers who are lifting him up. He's aspiring, and they lift him up even when he is half sinking. No? So, with this help of these mysterious powers, he goes on ascending higher and higher and higher without pause. But however high he rises, there's always this kind of sky above, a signless, vague immensity brooding. Something is there, like maybe like vast wings. There's no way to approach it. It doesn't give any response. And what it seems to do is to condemn finite things to nothingness, as if all these finite things are just illusory, meaningless, without value. And Asvapati finds himself faced with the incommensurable. If something is incommensurable, there's nothing against which it can be measured. There's nothing to compare it with. It is something unseizable, because we have nothing to measure it with or compare it to. But then there comes an end to the ascent. To the ascent there came a mighty term. It reaches a limit. It reaches a height where nothing made could live, nothing created could live. There's a line, a borderline, where every hope and search must cease. And that is bringing him nearer to some bare reality that is intolerant, which doesn't tolerate anything else to exist except itself. A zero formed, pregnant with boundless change. Zero. It's a sign of nothing, of emptiness. But this is a zero which is pregnant, which will give birth to something. It will bring about boundless change. So there on that dizzy edge, like on the very ridge, highest ridge of a mountain, where all disguises fail, only the truth can stand there, and human mind must abdicate in light, it must just surrender to that higher light, or else it will just be destroyed, like a moth being burned up in the candlelight, no? In that blaze of truth. He finds himself faced with a tremendous choice. Everything that he's been, and everything that he's been growing towards, he now has to leave it behind. or else it must all be transformed into a self of that which has no name. So his spirit is all alone, facing this intangible force which offered nothing to the grasp of thought. The mind can't get hold of it at all. His spirit faced a new adventure, the adventure of the inane, what seems to be absolutely empty. Even without meaning. There he is. He's still struggling. He doesn't know what to do, no? But he's been abandoned by the worlds of form. A fruitful worldwide ignorance foundered here. Foundering, it's what a ship does when it dashes against the rock in the storm. It's broken and it sinks. This worldwide ignorance, the manifestation, our manifestation. It has produced a lot, it has been fruitful, so much has emerged. But now it can't carry him any further. It foundered. So he feels that the long, far-circling journey of thought has come to an end. And the will has been his great strength. No, that's what's been leading him, is the power of his will and his aspiration. Now it has to pause, because here it has no power, it is ineffective. All the symbol modes of being, it means all the modes of being that we have here in the universe, help no more. The mind, the life, substance, all the different levels, and all the structures that have risen up out of the nescience, collapsing, failed. And even the spirit that holds the universe fainted in luminous insufficiency. The cosmic spirit which has upheld all this, all these planes and these symbol modes, now it seems to become weak and insufficient. So there's a kind of collapse of all the constructions, an abysmal lapse of all things built. In that lapse, the separate spirit has to melt away, accept extinction, or it has to be reborn into a new kind of truth which the mind can't touch. No? Then it would have to go transcend all these perishable supports, everything that we know and rely on. It has to join at last its mighty origin. So even the most wonderful forms of the highest levels, all glory of outline, all sweetness of harmony, is rejected by this intolerant bare reality. No? It's rejected as if it's just a grace of trivial notes. You know about grace notes, Don. No? When musicians are playing, there are optional notes that they can put in to make it sound more graceful or more delightful. But the real purists will leave them out. So these are just trivial notes. They don't really belong to the melody. They're just little extras. So all this, all the glory of the immemorial planes gets rejected like a grace of trivial notes. They are expunged. They are wiped off from the silence of pure existence. That naked, austere silence, and they die away into a nothingness. But this nothingness is a fine and blissful nothingness. And then you'd come to this line, the demiurges lost their names and forms. The demiurge, it's usually used of the powers of good and evil in these philosophies where they're supposed to be equal. They have equal power. But I think here he's referring to the gods, the cosmic powers. They have built these worlds. So there on that height, they lose their names and their forms, and these great schemed worlds that they have planned, that they have made, they are all dissolved. They are conquered, they are passed and abolished one by one. So he has an amazing experience, as if he's standing outside the universe, no? And he sees it remove its colored veil, all these colors and forms and shapes that make up the universe. And at a great distance, at the unimaginable end of the huge riddle, the mystery of created things, he sees the far-seen Godhead of the whole, his feet firm-based on life's stupendous wings, omnipotent, a lonely seer of time, inward, inscrutable, with diamond gaze. Mother has made a wonderful sketch of this this being. It's very, very powerful. And then there's a painting corresponding to it. He has a vision of the cosmic Godhead. There are feet based on these vast wings of life, and there are eyes, inward, inscrutable, with diamond gaze. And it seems to us, Swapati, as if all the cycles of time are attracted by the look of those eyes, that inward, inscrutable gaze. And the slow cycles return to their fount, to their origin. Unsolved, they have not found their fulfillment and their solution. So they rise again from that invisible sea. All the things that happen in time are absorbed back, and then they flow out again. For me here, the key word is unsolved. Asvapati was looking for a solution. And this experience which he's having here seems to reflect on a much higher level, the experience he had in the self of mind, where there was a similar vision of things returning to their source without being resolved. So we can read on from there. Marco, you like to start? Yes.
There's one short phrase which has astounded me. The adventure of the inane. How does the inane have adventure?
If you have to face the inane, that's quite a big adventure, I would say, to enter into a state where nothing makes sense, nothing seems, where all the symbol modes that you rely on don't help you. What are you going to rely on then when you have to face that intolerant, bare reality that you can't grasp in any way, which is ineffable?
But perhaps that what you did rely on turns out to be inane.
Yes, exactly. Whatever you relied on is now ineffective and useless, in vain. Yeah. Yes, come on. Yes.
All that from his puissance born was now undone. Nothing remained that the cosmic mind conceives. Eternity prepared to fade and seem the hue and imposition on the void. Space was the fluttering of a dream that sank before its ending into nothing's days. The spirit that dies not, and the Godhead self seemed myth projected from the unknowable. From it all sprang, in it is called to cease. But what that was, no thought, no sight could tell.
Thank you. In the course of the last week, I was told that Dr. Nadkarni, that great Savitri lover and scholar, had once said that the most difficult words in Savitri are he, she, and its. Because it's difficult to know what they're referring to. So here in this line it says, all from his puissance born was now undone. Who is this he? It must be the far-seen Godhead of the whole. So whatever he has created, whatever has risen out of his power is now dissolved. The universe has removed its colored veil. Nothing remained that the universal mind conceives. Even eternity seems to be about to dissolve. It seems like something which has been imposed on the emptiness, just a coloring. Space, this sense of extent itself seems to be like a dream that's ending, sinking into the nothingness before it's reached its resolution. Even the immortal spirit, even the divine, the Godhead self, this universal Godhead, seem to be myths, some kind of unreal forms that have been projected from the unknowable. That's the origin of everything, the beginning and the end of everything. From it all sprang. In it is called to cease. But what that was, no thought nor sight could tell.
Either way, it looks like ourselves. When we dream of something, we dream and the dream is real and something created by our mind. There is a space, there is things, there are color, there are these things. Then, when the dream is over, everything fades away.
Yeah.
And we are there. Of course, in a certain way, I don't know what I am.
Yes, that's it. Later on it says something about collapsing to waking mind. Yeah. But here, what now? No? What is it collapsing to? That waking mind no longer exists. So in the next sentence or paragraph, it's just two sentences. Sri Aurobindo evokes that experience when everything is taken away. You like to read?
Only a formless form of self is left. The tenuous cause of something that had been. The last experience of the last thing lived. Before it seems filled with formless feeling. As if it can even in the wake of that keep the appearance of the ocean. Last night,
Thank you. Everything has been stripped away. He's on the very verge of extinction. There's only this formless form of self. It's like a ghost. Something which used to exist. It's like the feeling of a wave before it sinks back into the ocean. It's just keeping, before it disappears into nothingness, it keeps this bare feeling, sense of the ocean from which it has emerged and into which it will sink back. There's this vastness, but there's no sense of space. It's paradoxical. We can't get our minds around this, no? An everlastingness which is cut off from time. There's this peace, a strange, sublime, inalterable peace, silent, rejected from it, world and soul. Alice, you'll read.
Stark, companionless reality answered at last to his soul's passionate search. Passionless, wordless, absorbed in its fathomless passion. The mystery beyond the universe. It rooted in scruples.
Thank you. Amitoj, you'll read to the end.
A pure existence saved from thought and mood, a consciousness of unshared immortal bliss. It dwelt aloof in its bare infinite, one and unique, unutterably so. A being formless, featureless, and mute that knew itself by its own timeless self. Aware forever in its motionless depth, uncreated, uncreated, and unborn, the one by whom all live, who lives by night, an immeasurable luminous secrecy guarded by the veils of the unmanifest. Above the changing cosmic interlude, abode supreme, immutably the same, a silent cause. Cold, impenetrable, infinite, eternal, unthinkable, alone.
Thank you. So in these 30 lines, Sri Aurobindo evokes, expresses, communicates something of what is ineffable, what cannot be expressed. This is a supreme spiritual experience which has been the goal of many yogas. It's not what Asvapati was looking for. It's not what he was hoping for and expecting. This stark, companionless reality. Now it's answering at last his soul's passionate search. This seems to have no passion in it. It doesn't answer. It's wordless. It seems to convict all the effort of the world of ignorance, of futility. It seems to give no sanction of supernal light to everything that goes on here in the universe. It's not the end of the story. We have many more pages to read before we come to the end of book 3. But this is an essential stage or step in Asvapati's journey before he can win the boon that he's been seeking all this time. Savitri also passes through a similar experience. It's described on pages 545 to 550. I'll just read a few lines from the near the top of page 549. Unutterably effaced, no one and null. A vanishing vestige, like a violet trace. A faint record merely of a self now past. She was a point in the unknowable. Only some last annulment now remained. Annihilation's vague, indefinable step. A memory of being still was there and kept her separate from nothingness. She was in that, but still became not that. This shadow of herself, so close to naught, could be again self's point d'appui to live, return out of the inconceivable, and be what some mysterious vast might choose. Even as the unknowable decreed, she might be naught, or new become the all, or if the omnipotent nihil took a shape, emerge as someone and redeem the world. We still have some time. Would you like to read the whole canto again?
Canto 2.
Canto 1. Just soak ourselves in these powerful words.
page 305, back to the beginning. Do you like to read? Would you like to read?
If you can. It's so sweet as the unknowable. All is too little that the world can give. Its power and knowledge are the gift of time. And can't feel the spirit's sacred thirst. Although of one these forms of greatness are, and by each breath of grace or life's abide, although more near to us than nearness itself, it is an utter truth of what we are.
Thank you. Bridget, a being formless, featureless, and mute, that knew itself by its own timeless self, aware forever in its motionless deep, uncreating, uncreated, and unborn, the one by whom all lives, who lives by now, and in an immeasurable luminous secrecy, guarded by the veil of the unmanifest, above the changing cosmic interlude, abode supreme, immutable, the same, a silent cause occult, impenetrable, infinite, eternal, unthinkable, alone.
Thank you. I think Mother reads only one. Shall we? Mother reads one passage only from this canto. We can hear that close.
To get Sunil Savitri, I think. Okay.
Purusha Purana tvamasya vishvasya param nidhanam vettasi vedyancha parancha dham tvaya tatam vishvam ananta rupa vayurya moha agnir varulaha shashankaha prajapatistvam prapitamahascha namo namaste astu sahasya kritvaha punascha bhuyo yami namo namaste punascha bhuyo yapi namo namaste
namo namaste